www.thebrainfarm.com.
This is Chris Evans with the Storage Unpacked podcast. And this week, I'm here with Tony Mendoza from Spectralogic. Hi, Tony.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. I've got an interesting topic today, but before we get to that point, could you just introduce yourself to the audience? Tell them what you do for the company?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Tony Mendoza, and I am the Senior Director of IT here at Spectralogic, and I've been with the company for about 20 years.
Perfect. And as a company, you make libraries, tape systems?
Correct. Storage products, just storage products in general, storage solutions.
Yes. And actually, we the reason this conversation has come about is because I had a briefing from one of your colleagues, David, who was telling me about some of your new technology called Veil. And as part of that, we had a conversation about a ransomware attack. And that seemed like a really interesting topic to get into and have as a discussion, because we hear a lot about ransomware, but we don't always hear about what actually happens and how people deal with it. So that's our conversation for today, is to talk about that and how you dealt with the problem that you had.
Great.
So why don't you just start off by telling us what happened, and then we can dig into, you know, what you did.
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So as you heard from David, we were attacked by ransomware. This was spring of last year, right before summer. And this is right when most companies were devising a plan because of COVID. And so our plan was to move from a traditionally on-premise workforce to a remote workforce very quickly to, you know, mitigate any of the pandemic issues that we were having at the time. And what happened during that was ransomware attacks went up exponentially at that time. And so we were hit. We were hit very quickly after we moved our workforce to a remote workforce. And it obviously caught us off guard and caught us at a time where we weren't expecting to deal with that at the same time.
So do you think that was just coincidence that, you know, you were hit at the time? Or do you think that the ransomware people are out there thinking lots of companies are going to be, you know, putting their workforce onto remote working, and therefore we'll just try our luck with all of these companies?
I think it was the latter, that they were being opportunistic and understanding that companies were maybe in a position where they weren't prepared to deal with it. Obviously, we had security in place at the time, and the ransomware that we were attacked with happened to be the most sophisticated ransomware at the time. And I do think they were being opportunistic at that time.
Okay. So what happened? How did you first identify that a problem had occurred?
Yeah. So interesting. You know, obviously we haven't dealt with this in the past. We've been attacked in the past, and we've dealt with attacks, but this was a kind of new to us attack with the way ransomware was working at the time. So our workforce was moving to remote, but our IT group was still on premise. We were still cleaning up. We're still trying to figure stuff out, still implementing systems, implementing security at that time. And we noticed early in the afternoon that some systems were failing. And obviously, being in IT, we see that all the time. But what ended up happening is that as we were investigating one system, another system died. And they weren't failing completely. They were still online, but they were acting strange. So within about 45 minutes, we found a ransom note. And I'll be honest, initially I looked at it and thought, this is fake. There's no way this is real. I mean, it looked, it was a text file with some instructions in it asking for a lot of money. But what ended up happening is my team started coming to me saying, hey, these are everywhere. Where we used to have 1,000 files, we have one giant file and a note. And,
wow. Okay.
And so we realized very quickly at that point that we were under attack. And I'm not exaggerating. We ran to our data center and pulled plugs.
Yeah, I can entirely understand that approach. I remember, was it called the I Love You virus that got sent by email?
Yeah,
in about 1999. I remember we had that in the company that I was running at the time, which was a startup. And the first thing we did was we literally walked into the room where the internet connection was, which was, I think, it wasn't ADSL, but I think it was a lease line at the time. And we just disconnected it, turned the router off, and just said, "Stop anything. Don't care what happens."
Yep.
I guess the issue with that one was obviously that was spinning around internally within companies. But from your perspective, I guess by that point you had it in there.
Yeah.
And then you've got to decide how you're going to take an approach to deal with it.
Yeah, you know, so just like you said, I mean, that was always my way of thinking in IT, coming, you know, in 20 years in IT, that's just what we did. But as you stated, with that other virus is we had it internally and it was propagating internally. We didn't know at that time. This is early the day of attack. It took us about, say, 20 hours before we had a handle on what was attacking us.
Right.
So, you know, we went through that day of really assessing what happened, talking to security partners to help us assess what happened. So I say that we pulled the plug. It was early the next morning before we knew how bad our attack was and how far it was propagating through our infrastructure.
Okay. And in that time, I guess you were logging onto servers, trying to document which ones had failed. You know, did you take sort of any intermediate action? Did you just try and shut other things down in order to stop it propagating?
Yeah. So obviously, you know, after we pulled the plug, we shut down systems. We physically shut down systems. Then we started bringing them up one at a time in a quarantine state to see what was happening to them, you know, what the damage was. And, you know, we could see it when we brought up a server, what was happening, that the files were being encrypted. And these, you know, 90% of these are on flash storage. So they were encrypting extremely fast.
Of course.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, when we realized that we were bringing every system up in a quarantine state and every system was failing or was missing its file system and it was propagating through the operating system, that's when we shut everything down and had some serious meetings to figure out what our real plan of action was. We couldn't at this point bring systems up. And, you know, during this time, this first 20 hours or 24 hours, we were notified by our corporate counsel that we had cybersecurity insurance.
Okay.
And so that was very helpful. We contact them. They give us resources. And some of my peers in the industry recommended we called the FBI, and that was a good call to get their cybersecurity agents on the phone.
I guess one of the things when you get to that point, you're sort of looking at it thinking, well, if you've not been through it before, you know, it's quite a complex thing. I mean, think about, say, a disaster recovery plan, because I think, you know, they're fairly similar in some respects.
Yep.
If you've never been through it before, but you've been through that paper exercise of doing it and thinking, I think it'll be fine, that's one thing. But when it really happens and you've really got to deal with it, that's very different. So having access to people in, say, the FBI or other organizations through your cyber insurance who can guide you through and tell you what to do and what steps to take, I guess that's really quite helpful at that point.
Right. So we are a storage manufacturer, and our disaster recovery plan is very thorough and tested, and we know it very well. But right. That was the old that's disaster. That's physical disaster. And yeah. We try to apply some of that, some of our business continuity planning to this. And it a little bit worked. Some didn't, you know, obviously since then we've rewritten our disaster recovery and our cyber attack recovery plan. But at the time we were realizing that the disaster recovery plan didn't really cover what we were trying to do. Having those external resources kind of walk us through it really gave us insight into what we were up against.
Yeah. So that's great. So you've got some help there. You've got people giving you some direction. I'm assuming the FBI said, don't pay any ransom. Don't bother. Don't engage. Don't pay a ransom, because that seems to be like the way that most companies are told, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah. You know, interesting at the time, I think in the last year, the advice they give has changed. So at the time when we were attacked, they gave us options. They didn't say, you know, don't do this, or they let us kind of decide. They gave us, you know, their advice, but they're really hands off with what decisions you're making. They're just giving you cybersecurity advice. And they were familiar with the people that, you know, the threat actors that attacked us. But I recommend that they are a good resource to have on your side to at least bounce ideas off of.
Yeah. And obviously from our perspective in the UK, we wouldn't have the FBI. Right. We'd have whatever our equivalent is. And I honestly don't know. I mean, you contact the local police, I guess, and maybe they've got a cyber crime organization that deal with all of this. There must be something in every jurisdiction somewhere. So I guess it's a case of understanding who your local jurisdiction and your local law enforcement people would be in that instance.
Yeah. And you know, the interesting thing is your options at the time, and this is, you know, regardless of who you contact, you have the option of not contacting the threat actors. you have the option of contacting them and negotiating with them and talking maybe about a lower price. And then you have the option of paying, obviously.
Yeah.
But what you don't know with any of those options are what the outcome will be. So let's say you did pay the ransom. They don't have to give you any recovery tools. Or the recovery tools could fail or not fully recover you. So that's a lot of the stuff that we were given the advice of how to weigh these things. And they said nothing's guaranteed, obviously.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's always a challenge, isn't it? Because you think to yourself, well, I shouldn't pay it. But then you might look at it and think that maybe it is cheaper to try and unpick the systems. But I always think in the back of your mind, you're two things really. A, you've got that issue that says, will it ever work? You know, and even if it does work, how long is it going to take? And B, there's a question that says, if everybody starts paying out on their cybersecurity and paying ransoms, suddenly your premiums are going to become so expensive that getting insurance is going to be so hard or very expensive that, you know, you're not really helping the situation. It's like driving a car and crashing it every week, you know, and expecting the premiums to be the same.
Yeah. And we actually talked to some other companies that paid ransom and didn't get any recovery tools. And so that money is just going, I mean, it's just, you're just giving them money.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the interesting kind of lessons learned here, and this was based on that disaster recovery plan is we, you know, we had to obviously stop it. This is before we decided what to do with the threat actors. So we had, they gave us, I think, 5 days to make a decision. But what we realized in that time was, you know, obviously we weighed the option of paying them. We realized that because of the disaster recovery plan we had in place and the way we were storing data, and, you know, obviously I have access to all of our hardware that we manufacture.
Of course.
So I have a very robust data system, recovery system in our company. We realized that we had all of this data protected. We had it, you know, on tape and our tape is kept off site and it was very protected. And so we started gaining confidence by looking at what our assets were. And we did a few tests and figured out that our tape was there. We had disk snapshots on some of our disk products. And what we realized very quickly was, okay, we have our data, so we don't need to negotiate on this data piece. And then the second piece was we had to figure out, was there any security breaches such as data egress and credential egress? And what we realized, you know, what this is where our security partners helped us with audits is data hadn't left the company. The pulling the plug worked in that instance. That data had not left the company and credentials have not left the company. So all these things come into play, but 5 days is not a long time when with a small team, you know, we don't have a NOC here at SpectraLogic. So 5 days was not a very long time for us to get all this in order to make that decision. But that's really the things you have to weigh when you're going through it.
I think you've raised some very other interesting points there. You know, the issue of having the ransomware attack is one side of it. But identifying whether data has been stolen or credentials have been stolen so that somebody could come back in again. And even if you do rebuild those systems, you can't rebuild them and use the same credentials. You're going to have to start again with a lot of the security constructs you've got in place, you know, whether that's resetting passwords or rebuilding AD domains or whatever it is you decide that is, you know, the recommended approach. So there's recovery, but also there's, I can't even think of a good term for it. It's almost like reprotecting or changing the locks, isn't it? It's like changing the locks on your house after you've lost a key or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that process you've got to go through as well. So there is a huge amount of work involved in actually the recovery.
Yeah. And so I don't want to say that, you know, we beat this and we were back up in 5 days. We made a decision in 5 days to engage in a recovery. Right. And what you said is there's a data recovery piece, which we, you know, assigned to a team. There's the AD rebuild piece, which we did have to go through that. And then there's the security piece, the endpoint detection and response piece that we had to put in place to make sure that this thing would not rear its head again, that, you know, we didn't miss something on a server in a PowerShell script. So the process of getting what we call back to normal was about 30 days to 60 days of getting back to normal. We got our business back up and running with data recovery and security within a week or two. But you're still, you know, you're chasing security issues for the next 2 months.
Yeah. So we got to the point where you've decided you're not going to pay. You're going to go down that route of recovery. I guess because you've got a DR plan already sitting there aligned, you must have an idea of importance and priority of systems in order to what and how to bring things back in a particular order. Did you just simply then say, well, let's just delete and rebuild those systems based on that sort of existing plan?
So basically we do have that business continuity plan that tells us what our tier ones, what systems have to come up to keep business alive. One of the saving graces was our email, our Exchange server was unaffected.
Right. Okay.
It took us a day or about 24 hours to realize that, you know, to bring it up in a quarantine and realize that it's protected and then protect it from the rest of the infrastructure. So that was very helpful, was having communication inside and outside the company. But yeah, we follow a tiered approach of recovery. And so we obviously have those tier one systems that we're going to bring up first and bring them up with their data and make sure that the data is, before I say that, there's a point that we have to figure out what that recovery point is when we were attacked.
Good point.
And you know, we had to go back, I believe it was 24 or 48 hours prior to us realizing that we were attacked, to feel confident that that data was safe.
So before we go into the detail of how you did it, that's another very, very good point. Understanding at what point you were compromised.
Correct.
You know, were you compromised 24 hours before, 3 months before?
Correct.
And it's things like that the hackers are trying to change in terms of their access methods, where they'll sit dormant for a while.
Yeah,
because they want you to into your backups to have all of these, you know, encrypted, not the actual encrypted data, but certainly the code ready to be triggered at some point. And that's, I guess, that must be very tricky to work out exactly where you feel like you were compromised.
Right. And this is where, you know, in our case, having, you know, the FBI and the security partners that we engage, having them with their knowledge of this attack, walking us through that. Obviously, we couldn't have figured that out on our own.
Right.
But there is that, you know, they've gotten more intelligent now, where they will attack your backups. And so they know people like us went to our backups, and they're going, okay, well, we'll destroy those now.
That in itself is a bit of a worry, isn't it? You start to think that they've obviously thought ahead and think, well, you know, it's like, I have a post on it. I wrote a post a couple of months ago where I described ransomware as a Darwinian problem. So like evolution, where one animal evolves to protect itself from being predated on by something else, then the animal that's doing the predating evolves to actually correct that challenge. Ransomware's got to the same point, where every time we work things out and we think, right, we've got backups, it's great. Okay, well, we'll attack the backup system.
Yeah.
You know, okay, for example, we know you're doing backups and we can't get to the backup system. So what we'll do is we'll put our code in 6 months and we'll hope that your backups have rolled off, so that all of your backups have rolled off and you haven't got one old enough that you can go back to, that when you restore, it'll be valid enough to use, because the data will be so out of date that you won't want to use it. So there are so many different techniques here that are changing. And I think that's a really scary sort of side to this. So even though you've recovered, you've still got a lot of work to think about how you actually ongoing protect against this.
Yeah. And you know, that's absolutely accurate is the way that they are evolving. And we've been told that they're evolving faster than we're reacting to it. Obviously they're ahead of the game.
Right.
And so we're reacting to their evolvement. But, you know, one of the things that we learned in this attack was that they are going to attack our stored data. They are going to attack our snapshots. They are going to try to attack our backups. And we were told this. And so what, you know, I can say lucky for us is I had our product in place, and I can say, hey, this is the attack we saw, and this is the attack we're going to see in the future. Hey, product marketing, can you build something like this that's going to protect me from this in the future? Because I do fear attack. To this day, I fear the day I'm going to be attacked again. And I know I'm going to be attacked again. And anyone that believes they're not going to be attacked, is they need to change that line of thinking, because it's not if, it's when. But when I get attacked again, I want to be confident that even if they've become intelligent enough to attack my offline data, I have snapshots that are unattackable, that are, you know, immutable from attack. And so the great thing is now we're building this into our products, and I get to have it protecting me now.
Isn't it funny how, if you go back 30 years, or, you know, as long as the company's been in existence, we had indirectly, without realizing it, ransomware protection in the form of tapes, in the form of offline media, and the need for somebody who was in a data center as an operator to get a tape off a shelf, shove it in a drive. And as soon as we started moving to the point of automation, we were still okay-ish. But when we'd started doing disk backups, and we thought we were building ourselves solutions that were so much more efficient, actually what we were building in was risk, which is, it's really funny to think.
It is, and you know, it's the kind of the joke I say is the more efficient that process is how efficient it's going to be attacked also. And so the great thing is now, you know, it's unfortunate that we were attacked, but now we can start thinking about, hey, look, this protected us. And if we make some tweaks to that process, it'll be a true virtual air gap or physical air gap. And like you said, we were unknowingly ransomware protecting our data.
Yeah. So you got your systems back, you went through a process, you recovered, and you were up. And obviously, you prioritize systems that needed to come back first. But obviously, it's a long and a protracted job, I guess, to go and rebuild systems.
Yeah.
Because you've now got to, for every system you've got, you've now got to know, well, how do I rebuild that? What's my data point? What's the synchronous point of that data with some other system?
Yeah.
Everything's sort of interconnected. So you can't just say, well, let's just bring it all back and then see what happens. You know, when you've got systems that pull data out of other systems, that data's got to be in sync properly. And there's all sorts of other challenges. So clearly, recovery isn't instant. There's no big button just to hit back and do recovery. Has it now changed your outlook in the way, for instance, you do data protection, the way that you do your disaster recovery? And have you sort of added extra process around your whole backup and restore to allow you to think about how to do that quicker?
Yeah. And so, like I said earlier, I have access to all these hardware products that, you know, we manufacture. So people's, you know, the advice I give to people is, and this is what we learned from the situation, is that you have to build this into your disaster recovery plan, right? You have to have a cybersecurity disaster recovery plan or a cyber attack disaster recovery plan.
Yeah.
But what I've realized is that you have to really balance where you're storing your data. Put it on multiple mediums, right? Put it on disk, put it on tape, replicate your disk, replicate your backups. So it's what we've realized is that you can't put all your ducks in one pond and put all your backups on one solution. You have to put those across multiple solutions and then protect them on those solutions.
Yeah. It's interesting. Do you remember 3 or 4 years ago, we had a big thing with copy data management where everybody said, consolidate all of this stuff. Just, you know, when people had stuff scattered around the organization, actually, in some respects, having data following that 3-2-1 rule where you've got something on disk, something on tape, something remote, something whatever, especially for things like restoring from snapshots where you can restore things really quickly and be back up. And then other things that are more offline on disk and all that sort of stuff. All of these different layers actually represent opportunities for restore and to recover at different intervals. So
right.
It's clear that there is a need for a mix of different technologies and different responses to this.
Yes, absolutely. That is one thing. You know, unknowingly we did this is we diversified our storage and diversified our backups and that saved us.
Yeah. So looking back at it, you know, that this was last year, and obviously you've done lots of things to improve this. I was just thinking when we had the presentation a few weeks ago, that it was quite a brave thing to come forward and be honest about this, that this had happened to you, bearing in mind you are a data storage company. You know, clearly you didn't have everything in place because it's very difficult to have that in place for everything because you just never know what's coming up. But I think you've been very honest in coming forward and actually admitting that this happened and that you had a solution to resolve it.
Yeah, you know, so you're talking to the IT guy right now who doesn't want to admit attack or admit that that we failed security, but it happened, and what we're doing is we're taking this opportunity to let other companies know that it does happen, and there are ways to mitigate it, and there are ways to recover from it. But you know, we figured that we had a recipe in place that worked. And we were happy to talk to anybody about what we had in place and how it worked and what we could do better and what other companies can do better. And I know, you know, when I spoke to the CEO about going public with this, I said, you're going to put a target on my back, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we say we beat this, but that's why I say I know we're at risk and we're always going to be at risk for attack. And what it's doing is making us harden our storage systems against attack. And so it's just a game that we're going to play.
Yeah, I'm interested in that expression, that idea that you put a target on your back. And I sort of see what you mean. And I think that's an issue because you don't know whether, by saying what you said, whether the hackers are that clever or whether they're just spraying out there, you know, their code at every particular organization, whether they're really going, well, we're going to get those guys next week or not. But the challenge, I think, with it is that you could say, for example, well, let's demonstrate what we think is our ability to recover. You know, we've gone through these tests and we think we're a gold star in terms of ransomware recovery. Again, that might put a target on your back from people to say, well, we should have a go try and break into them. But at some point, maybe companies might have to start saying how good they are, or at least demonstrate what protection they put in place, because there might be clients who come along and say, well, I don't really want to deal with that company because I haven't got an idea of whether, if I do put my business with them, whether if they hit a ransomware issue, they'll be back in business within a week or whatever. And that might affect my business.
Yeah, that's really what it is us saying that we're prepared for an attack. We're not going to block it, and they are very sophisticated. And you had a point earlier, is if they're just blanket attacking everyone that's connected to the internet. And we do see that every day. We get, you know, port scanned all day long, and we're getting constant email attacks.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that are just generic. If they land something, they land something. And I think that's how we were attacked. We're not a big enough a company that people are targeting us. And when I say I'm putting a target on my back, I don't know if hackers are out there going, oh yeah, you know, you think you beat us, we'll come back after you. I don't know if they care. They're probably fairly busy attacking everyone. And I'm not saying that I'm going to block them. I'm saying that I feel that we're strengthening our data posture and our attack hardened posture, that we can recover from it with a little bit of pain and not really put us out of business. And there's going to be pain. I have accepted that.
So I run a number of websites which are mostly WordPress related. So you may have some internal ones you run yourself. The one thing I notice on that is you get hit all the time on SSH ports, 22. Yep. You're getting hit all the time on the admin page for the WordPress site. And you end up having to put in protection that changes the ability for, well, basically, without going into technical details, drops the connection for any particular IP address that you just don't want to service. And, you know, there are blacklists, whitelists for all of that, so you can keep on top of it. But if you don't do that, I've seen situations where I've seen DDoS attacks against the WordPress site that just basically try to overwhelm Apache and take it down.
Yep.
And I don't know whether, I don't think those guys really even care. I think they're just spraying stuff out onto any random server they can zombie attack, and then they just wait and see until one of them calls back and says, hey, look, we've managed to encrypt this guy. Let's go and see what we can get.
I completely agree with that analysis. And we're just reacting to it is what we're doing.
Yeah, I think it's a bit like you put a house alarm out, and hopefully you, by having house alarms and stickers in the garden that say you're protected, you know, the burglar walks past and finds somebody else who isn't as protected. It doesn't really help that person who isn't as well protected. But what it does say is that everybody should be taking this seriously.
Yeah.
And it sounds to me like, from your perspective, you know, if we have to sit here and say, well, what are the conclusions? It seems to me the conclusions are about taking this seriously.
Yeah, it really is. It's awareness. It's just be aware. It's there. It's happening. Don't, you know, obviously before we were attacked, it wasn't the first thing on my mind thinking that we were, you know, targets of a ransomware attack. But awareness is great. And corporate awareness is great now too, because our associates are now aware of the pain that we went through. And so they're just very alert about what's coming in through email and what they're clicking on and where they're going and what's happening with their system. So it's great, the awareness it's driven in our company.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what a great story. And thank goodness you were able to recover and get everything back to an operational state fairly quickly. And let's hope it doesn't happen again, and that, you know, you are prepared. But I imagine this will be a regular thing for you to go back and review all of your setup to see exactly where you are. Because if you don't, you know, you never know what could come along next time around. This is always going to be a repeating thing to be on top of.
I agree. I preach, it's not if it happens, it's when it happens.
Yeah. So Tony, that was great. I mean, what an interesting story. I appreciate you taking us through it. And, you know, as I said earlier, you know, just being honest about the fact that this happened and the fact that you had a plan and you dealt with it and you managed to get your systems back in a reasonably okay time frame. If people want to learn a bit more about the technology that sat behind it, which clearly is all the Spectralogic technology, your libraries, your disk systems and everything else, should we just point them at spectralogic.com? Does that seem like the logical place?
Yeah, absolutely. Spectralogic.com. And then if people take a look at our attack-hardened products, that's really what's come out of this ransomware attack.
Right. So these are products that you've specifically added extra, encryption and other features to specifically, and I guess things like the immutable snapshots and so on, to specifically deal with the sort of challenges that ransomware represents.
Yes, absolutely. That's very accurate. And you know, I'll plug, there's a couple of resources that I've put out there, and people can go download them or take a look at some of our webinars that I've recorded, that talk about some of the, you know, the attack itself and some of the things you can do post attack or to prepare for an attack.
Brilliant. Tony, thank you. I'll put all of those in the show notes, which we obviously have every week so that people can go and look at that. But for now, Tony, thanks very much. Appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Storage Unpacked. For show notes and more, subscribe at storageunpacked.com. Follow us on Twitter at Storage Unpacked or join our LinkedIn group by searching for Storage Unpacked Podcast. You can find us on all good podcatchers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Thanks for listening.